This is Father Ted, and you are listening to the Bunker Jiu-Jitsu Podcast. Okay, so we're back again, and today we have a slightly different type of guest, because so far on the Bunker Podcast, we've been talking with Jiu-Jitsu practitioners, and today I have with me Dan Zotis, who does not do Jiu-Jitsu.
Correct,
okay. I'm trying to get you into the pajamas, but you're too busy. But Dan, who incidentally enough is also the president of my Greek of our church here at Prophet Elias, but he is also one of the major sponsors of the Bunker Tournament, and he is, I don't know what position you have. Are you president, CEO?
Co-founder and CFO.
Co-founder and CFO. Chief Financial Officer?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Co-founder and CFO of Awake Chocolate. Right? Or is it Awake Caffeinated Chocolate?
Awake Chocolate.
Awake Chocolate. All right. And so, you know, Dan, along with a lot of other people, helped a lot in kind of bringing about the success of the Bunker by sponsoring and especially, you know, providing his delicious caffeinated chocolates that kept all the fighters, you know, super energized during the event. And today we have him here to tell us about his story and how he got into this whole business. And it's quite an interesting story. So, Dan, it's really nice to have you on the podcast.
Well, thank you, Father. I'm humbled to be here. Thank you for having me. And it's our pleasure to have the partnership that we do with the Bunker Tournament. It is a really cool thing that you run. Before we get into the story of Awake, you've mentioned to me the story of the Bunker, and I find that really fascinating. It's often that great things start from places that you don't expect.
Mm-hmm.
And from the story that you shared with me, that's exactly how it started for you. And for Awake, it was the exact same place that you don't expect. Our story started in 2010.
Okay.
In October of 2010, we were all three of us. There's three operating partners, myself, my partner Adam, and my partner Matt.
Co-founders as well?
Co-founders as well. Each play senior roles within the company still to this day. The three of us were employed for PepsiCo at the time, and we were all good buddies on a personal front. I had met Adam on my first day of my career back in 2002 mm-hmm. at Kraft, and then he left to go to Pepsi, and I followed him. And my partner Matt also started his career at Kraft, and mm-hmm. then he had a brief stint at Conagra, and then left to go to Pepsi as well. And there, the three of us became quite close. And
what were you doing at Pepsi at the time?
So I was at the time in sales, but I had started my career in finance.
Okay.
And my partner Matt started as a Mountain Dew dude mm-hmm. back in the day, and he was on the marketing side of things to start, and then spent the majority of his time in the sales function. So okay. he was a sales lead and won several awards at PepsiCo. So he had a lot of selling background. And then my partner, Adam, was largely finance and strategy is where he played. So finance, strategy, and pricing was his thing. So the three of us came from diverse backgrounds, but the one thing that really connected us was our personal bond. I got to know them on a professional basis, but personally, we were close. And it was not uncommon for us to go out for random lunches. And it just so happens one random October day, it was October 19th of 2010, we went to a local burrito place here in Mississauga called El Sombrero, and it was there that we all discovered that we all had the entrepreneurial itch, wanted to start something for our own, didn't quite know what we wanted to do, but wanted to at least see if there was a possibility of doing it. And we all realized that we shared that passion, all for different reasons, and all sure. coming from a different background. Ended up forming a partnership on the back of a napkin that day.
Mm-hmm.
And then just said we'd spend the next couple of months kicking the can down the road to see if there wasn't an opportunity there.
So you didn't even have chocolate in your mind yet, or
nope.
an actual product? You had the friendship first.
It was the friendship cool. first. Nice. And the friendship, let's call it the friendship that was also known on a professional side too. So I knew what capabilities
sure.
they had.
Yeah.
And likewise, they knew what I could do from a professional standpoint. And we all, that implicit trust started there, and it really hasn't phased since.
That's great.
So the three of us then got together over a series of many evenings and many weekends and over a lot of beer. And came up and started just throwing ideas together, things that we had been thinking about in the past, areas of particular interest. And what we all collectively decided was that if we were going to go and start something, it would be something that we knew that we were very familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
we realized that we didn't have all the money in the world to go and start this thing. In fact, we needed a lot of added support because we were all kind of raising new families, and we were going to put our families through
a massive
risk. Yeah, we were in our early 30s at the time. And we all decided that if we were going to take in investment, we wanted to be the ones that added all the value to the table from an operating standpoint. So we decided on consumer goods. Mm-hmm. My partner Adam had been sitting on this idea for a long time, and I'd love to tell you that it came from a story of inspiration where he was running one day and he fell underneath a tree because he broke his leg and an apple hit him and he had this epiphany. But really, sure, started from a very pragmatic standpoint. And
we're drinking all this beer and we're kind of sleepy.
Yeah. it really started from the insights that we had gathered. It from that end, it was really just us knowing the business and in the industry. And at the time, if you were to walk down a grocery store, mm-hmm, or walk down the aisles of a grocery store, you would see that there were these functional products that were really creating catalysts for growth in these categories that were flat to declining. Carbonated soft drinks, came energy drinks that carved out a $10 billion subsegment.
Sure.
You had fiber and omega and granola bars, probiotics and yogurt, vitamin fortified waters. You name the category, the mega category, and there was some major growth catalyst that was coming because of functional products.
Sure.
Chocolate was the one mega category that didn't have it. And the reason for that is, when you think about chocolate, and I'll ask the basic question, when you consume a chocolate bar, what is the only thing you expect it to be for you?
Oh, it's just pleasurable and, right, and a sugar high.
And it comes with sugar comes great taste.
Yeah, great taste, sure, yeah.
Taste is the only thing that a consumer could care about.
Yeah, it's not considered healthy.
Right. It's an indulgence. Yeah. It is an indulgence. It is something that it is an emotional, it's an emotional consumption occasion, at least traditionally, that, sure, is designed around great taste. Mm-hmm. So if you were to create a functional product within that space, you could literally put the solution to world hunger into a candy bar. And people will try it because they want to solve world hunger. Mm-hmm. But if the product tastes like crap, they will say, forget world hunger, I'm never having this again. Taste is the North Star,
sure, sure,
of chocolate. We happen to make that our motto. Mm-hmm. Taste has been at the utmost of importance. So we realized around that time that there was a challenge to overcome. Caffeine has a naturally bitter aftertaste to it, and a lingering one that ruins the taste of anything that it touches. So we got to exploring and researching to see if there were any food scientists that could mask the taste of chocolate. And on one day, and like a few months after that, in February, we got together at my house, together with the help of someone that had built and sold chocolate manufacturing facilities. He helped us kind of temper the chocolate on a small scale basis. And then we infused raw caffeine and this masked caffeine. Mm-hmm. And we found that we had something viable. Product that tasted,
so there was a
great
type of caffeine that was masked.
So we found a way to mask the taste, okay, of caffeine using a food-based coating ingredient, mm-hmm, and that this food scientist had developed and had commercialized, and used that as the basis to go and mask our the taste of caffeine and successfully infuse it into chocolate. Did that and realized we had something special. Started putting a business plan together. Mm-hmm. Spent the next year taking over 100 different investor meetings, and that's not a joke. While we had full-time demanding jobs and young and growing families, or in my case, mm-hmm, Melissa, we were looking to have our first kid at some point soon. We took in over 100 different investor calls, spent the next year basically trying to raise the capital.
Question for you at, yeah, this point. So like, you guys all decided on the idea of a caffeinated chocolate because you felt like there was a gap in the market for that.
Correct.
There was nothing really there.
Correct.
At all.
There wasn't. There was no.
So you're creating a functionality for something, like an added functionality to what used to be simply an indulgence.
You got it.
Right? Yeah. Which is makes you feel better about buying it too, right?
Like, so you add permissibility to a category, yeah, that is just all about indulgence. So when you add function to it, it means that it adds purpose.
Sure.
It gives more permissibility to eat it because now it's not just an indulgence. It's something that is going to help you, mm-hmm, get on with your day.
Sure.
So that was a big piece. The second one we realized is that there was an underserved market. Mm-hmm. And this we know because we worked in consumer goods, is that energy drinks were largely underutilized, mainly because they positioned a lot of other products to the male audience. Mm-hmm. And there lacked a real female-oriented,
sure,
energy product. And chocolate being skewing more heavily to female consumption,
yep,
was that perfect vector for us to go and launch an energy product.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it was sort of like the formation of the marriage of two worlds that needed it, and with an underrealized market that was
sure.
ripe for something like this. So we built a business plan around it, realized we had something special, raised about over $1 million of capital at that time to go
from
and launch this thing.
Yeah.
And that was basically to sample our product, get the product known, and to basically keep the lights on while we started generating.
Because $1 million is not a lot of money these days.
Right.
Not in the business world. Yeah, of course.
So we gutted it out, subletted space from my business partner's dad, who had a successful urban planning firm, and we've remained in that business since, but we've got our own unit right now.
Mm-hmm.
Our company started as a one-trick pony that year and have since expanded from that single SKU in Canada to available across both Canada and the United States in about 40,000 locations throughout both countries, largely within the U.S. We are manufactured here in Canada. Both of our facilities are in Quebec. We have 45 active items in our portfolio that span across 6 different formats and 8 different flavors, basically. And the
how
three
did
of
you,
us...
How did you start? Sorry, I don't mean to jump in. Like, when you... How did you first... Like, where did you first start selling? What was the first place you started to sell?
The first place that committed to ordering our product, if I remember correctly, was Rexall and Shell.
I'm asking because it's always like this. Like, when you're in that space, like, you know, either it's energy or it's pharmaceuticals or anything health.
Yeah.
It's always... Not like Rexall is, like, obscure, but it's obscure compared to, like... It always starts in these small little chains.
It was, yeah.
And then before you get the big fish, right? Like,
and yeah. If I'm the reason why I sounded like I was questioning it is because Rexall, I believe, gave us our first commitment, but it was Shell that actually put us in first.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then we sort of developed our business from there. One customer that's two customers that have been on board right since the beginning is Shoppers Drug Mart.
Okay.
They took us on nationally and have had our product in their stores basically since our company's inception.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And the other major, the other customer that you wouldn't think of is Bulk Barn.
Oh, yeah.
That's had us in right from the start.
Oh, wow.
So we've really cultivated a really strong partnership with them over the
and
time.
And in Canada, Bulk Barn is like the Whole Foods of...
Yeah, Bulk Barn and Shoppers Drug Mart are like, they're mega retailers here,
yeah,
right?
Sure.
Like they play a big role nationally. So they've been the strong partners that have got us, that helped us through. And while we were doing that, we really developed our college and university business. We focused on colleges and universities, hospitals, sure, office buildings, anywhere where busy people were frequenting, mm-hmm, that were looking for a pick-me-up to help get them through their day.
Mm-hmm. You got, did we mention that you got on TV?
Yeah. So right around that time, we...
like how far in after you kind of, the inception of the company, you started selling first and then you got on?
No. So it was before. We were... I'll never forget that. But so we got asked to go on Dragon's Den. The TV episode that you're talking
That's
about
cool.
was Dragon's Den. You think about how far along they are in their series. We aired in season 7. We're season 7, episode 15. So a long time ago.
Yeah.
And our film date was in April of 2012. And mm-hmm, at that point, two of the three of us were still at PepsiCo.
Oh, wow.
And I remember standing up on the rafters. So basically on Dragon's Den, they have you walk through a silhouetted area before you walk down and introduce.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if they still do that, but they used to do that back in the day. And we're standing at the top of the stairs, and my partner Adam's behind me. He's like, "Okay, boys, well, this is the point of no return. We're going on national television at this point, so we got to be sure about this." I'm like, I really needed that 30 seconds before. I'm not nervous enough as it is, but once you get
Did
on,
you have
the
any
show,
sales yet?
No,
no, that's crazy.
No,
I know. I watched Dragon's Den quite a bit and Shark Tank
in
the States.
So we had commitments. So retailer, my partner had Matt had left. We had commitments from several retailers at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as registering sales concerned, it really started to amplify once the three of us were on it full time.
Sure.
And that was after we had resigned from our jobs.
So how did that go? You went on to you went on to the show?
Went on the show.
You
and
had
at that
Kevin O'Leary there.
Yeah, so we shook hands.
Which other guys were on there?
David Chilton. So
David Chilton was
the five dragons were Bruce Croxon, David Chilton, Jim Treliving, Kevin O'Leary.
Javik
and
was there? No.
No, no. He had left the year before.
Okay. Yeah.
And Arlene Dickinson was the fifth.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
So we ended up shaking hands with David Chilton and Kevin O'Leary on the show. And a lot of what you saw on television was made for TV.
Of
At
course,
that
yeah. I mean,
point,
it's a show. It's
a lot of companies do go on to get to secure the capital. We were going on as it would be nice to get them on board, but it would be more strategic to get these investors.
for exposure.
We already had our investors lined up at that point.
Okay.
So this would be a nice add-on. And after the show, we went through diligence, and though we had presented what we did, it ended up that the ownership stake was much less. We ended up signing with David Chilton, and he's been an amazing partner
Okay,
that we
good. Oh,
still
that's
keep in
good.
touch with to this day.
Amazing. Yeah,
Like, as far as investors are concerned, he's about as good as it can come.
oh, wow. Great.
So, salt of the earth guy that I feel has a crystal ball, because that man can project, that man can predict what is basically going to happen before it does. Just a really, really smart individual.
That's why he's a dragon.
Yep,
That's why he knows what he's
exactly.
doing, right? Yeah. Nice. So you guys hadn't even, so you were just kind of like the beginning. Like, that's amazing. And how did you get on there? Just that you were just like, basically you applied, or they asked, or like, how did the...
So usually there's an application process. I think you have to submit through YouTube videos at the time. We had been a late add. We had met with David Chilton before he was a dragon.
I see.
We had got connected to him, and we had an investor meeting, and he was in the middle of launching his second book at the time, The Wealthy Barber Returns. So we didn't have a lot of time. He didn't have enough time to do diligence on investing in Behind Awake, but he was still interested in it. And when he went on Dragon's Den, he
Oh, he's
reached
there.
out to the producers and he said, "You need to get these guys
That's
on the
cool.
show."
Nice.
So we sort of bypassed all of those major auditions, and then they got us an air spot. And at that point, we had taken 100 investor meetings, so there wasn't a question that they would ask on the show that we wouldn't have an answer to. But we were in the middle of overhauling our entire packaging and brand. So we had 3 weeks. We were throwing out all of our existing packaging and going with something different, and we had to really rush to get all the new prototypes built, because it would have been a waste to go on the show and then present a brand that we would have launched within a different
Sure,
way a year later.
sure.
So,
That
yeah.
can be a blessing though, because that forces you to kind of roll everything out with a deadline,
You got
right?
it.
And
And it ended up being exactly that.
yeah.
We have our basis, and that brand that we created on that show is still the foundation of our Awake brand to
Sure.
this day.
The owl.
Neville is still the owl.
Yeah,
Yeah,
the
he's
owl's
still our
awesome.
official spokes owl for the company. So,
It's a great, yeah, it's a good logo, you know, like but it's the brand works like on so many levels, and it's like you know, the reason why okay, of course we know each other because we work together and like we're at the church, but the reason why I approached you for jiu-jitsu is because, wow, like what an it's a niche, but it's perfect.
it
Because
is.
training is huge,
Yeah.
right? And yes, of course, you see all these other energy drinks, Monster, all these different groups, whatever they're out there, and that's big in the jiu-jitsu world, right? Also big in other like sports worlds as well. Like and in martial arts, though, I think it's untapped, right? And when you're dealing with like training, things like that, not a lot of people, like people know about it, but like there's so much more space to grow, I think, in that area. Like not just with jiu-jitsu, but like karate, taekwondo, all these different groups, whatever, right? So maybe something to look at for you guys, like in the future, like to kind of try to target, because, you know,
Well,
it's a lot of people.
it's funny that you mentioned that, is that much of what we've had to do as entrepreneurs is be scrappy about where we spend. Unlike larger companies that can afford to make mistakes and dabble in numerous marketing endeavors
Yes.
and to try and get the word out there of their brand and get people to know about it and buy it time and time again, we had to take a bet.
100%.
And I have realized that over the 13 years that we've been doing this, is that you're only as good as your next bet. In
Sure.
a growing world, making an investment in something is really only going to pan out if that next investment works for you, because that investment could sink you if you're not careful. In our case, we knew what was most important to us. At the beginning, it was sampling. And much of what we've done from a marketing standpoint has always involved some level of sampling, whether it was through our Costco rotation last year or sampling on colleges and universities right from the get-go before we even had placement in
Sure.
those colleges in Canada. We sent a group of six individuals through the country to spread Awake's name by sharing it with everyone. It has always placed. Or whether it was sampling on WestJet Airlines, right? We were on every WestJet flight in 2022 for 6 months. Like, when you get your product into the hands of people and taste is the reason why you exist with
Yes.
that added benefit of function, it becomes a reason for it. Once people try it, they're apt to
Yeah,
have it again.
grassroots is always better than the money you could spend on like advertisement, commercials, and social media, right?
Yeah.
It's like Yeah, I know. Like, as I said, like, just you have to spend the money, of course, on the samples, on the actual product, right?
Yeah.
But that's cheaper than advertising.
You got it.
Right.
Yeah.
I know from my people, like, you've sponsored two bunkers now,
mm-hmm.
and people love the stuff.
Yeah.
Like, and once you get it, like, you're giving it away. Okay, you're saying, here, try this, right? But people are like, okay, I'm gonna go buy. I know most of my jiu-jitsu friends now, they go buy it Wake now because it's like, I see it in their bags at the dojo. Like, I see because they enjoy it, right? And there's
the trick is, as a small company and on that point of being scrappy, we've had sampling as part of it. So sampling's always been the play, but what we find is that we are looking for markets that aren't already captured by major sponsors. So take the NHL as an example. There is not a space on any hockey arena boards anywhere in the NHL that doesn't have something occupied by people that are paying top dollar for it. That's never been us. Sure. Like, those are mainstay brands that have been around for decades that have balance sheets and cash where they can afford to do things like that. For us, it's always been a scrappy thing for us. And we have tried to align our brand in areas where we can capture a demographic or a target audience that would fit. In your case, it's giving you that jolt, that added boost when you need it. But it's also a market that's largely underserved from a corporate sponsor standpoint.
Oh, yeah.
So we can invest behind it in an affordable way and help grow while the bunker grows too.
Sure,
and that's where it's played a big role.
The bunker is a local thing, right?
But the entire market.
Yeah, where we go, right? Because like all these competitors, like for example, the jiu-jitsu world. The jiu-jitsu world is really big now.
Yes.
Yeah. Next to karate, it's the most popular, fastest growing martial art, right? Karate still has the lion's share of the market anywhere in the world, especially North America, right? More kids do karate.
Yeah.
It's like 4-1 or something. It's massive, right? Karate's everywhere, right? Because it's franchise, it's just a big thing. All these kids do karate, right? But jiu-jitsu is everywhere now. Like, it's even Toronto now, metropolitan Toronto area, and Mississauga, and everything. Like, there's jiu-jitsu gyms everywhere, right? But it's so big now that, like, all these people, what we do is, like, when they compete, they're traveling. Because there's a lot of local competitions in Toronto, but the big ones is what is called IBJJF, which is International Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Federation, right? That's ginormous. Big, it's all over the world, IBJJF. And those are a lot of money there, right? And it's growing, but it's still niche, even though like millions of people are involved all over the world, right? There's an IBJJF tournament happening like everywhere, like right now. Like, my professor's down in Long Beach, California. They have the Masters North America, which I was there last year, at the pyramid, at the Walter Pyramid.
Really?
It's big, right? It's ginormous. And and all these, I was thinking about this, just like I was talking about this months ago too. It's like, these are places where things like Awake, for example, products, there's a lot of potential, even without spending a lot of money, to somehow figure out a way to partner with these places. Because like, jiu-jitsu guys would love this stuff, and you don't see any kind of marketing in these places. There's no Monsters, not there.
I know.
I don't see any advertisement for anything, right? Red Bull's not there. Nobody's there, right? It's really weird, right?
That is very, and I'm wondering whether it's intentional or not, but those are the kinds of markets that we're looking for. Like, it's the ones that, when you have the Monster or Red Bull amusement park show up as a sponsorship, chances are they're paying top dollar for it. And to be honest with it becomes more of an awareness and an exciting moment for
them. Even from massive companies like that, like Red Bull, Monster, like that, I think even them, they even consider it maybe to be small.
Yeah.
Even though it's not, it's quite large, right? As far as, but it's something to look into, because it's, you don't see big corporate sponsorship in these areas.
Yeah.
But that also opens up, like space for mid-level companies, right? To come in and kind of fill that space. But anyways, it's just an idea. But I would like to see it more, because I think the product is good, and it's good like on so many levels, not just for jiu-jitsu, but like, you get into all martial arts. Okay, not with kids, obviously. For the caffeine, but like, for the older people, right?
Yeah.
It's a huge thing. But anyway, something to speak about off the air.
Love it.
I hope that for the company it grows. So now you guys are, skip ahead now. We're in 2025. You guys have expanded quite a bit.
We have.
Right? So what were the next big leap,
So from when we started, e-com was barely a thing. Facebook was around for 5 years. Instagram was, I don't even know if Instagram was around at the time. And so a lot of what has grown is our social media presence, and more specifically, our e-com presence has grown. And the two segments that we are that we have really focused a lot of effort on for this year anyway is what we call the vending segment and the e-commerce segment. So e-commerce being sales on Amazon and on our own site that we run through Shopify. That business has will grow by another 60 to 70% for us this year. Okay. Like it's just it is on fire. We've and really that's business where it's a lot of trial and error. So you do a number of different activations and ads every week on Amazon, and you then hone in on the ones that are working and ones that aren't, and you sort of just tweak the messaging, tweak the communication, sure. tweak the ads, remove some, add some, and you work with agencies to help bring that to life. And
sure.
that's been a major way. Like insights driven growth has been the reason for our being in on Amazon and on our own site. Again, once we get people to the table, our repeat purchase is very strong. So
sure. yeah.
we've done a lot of work there, and that's a major catalyst for growth for us this year. The other piece is what we call the vending segment. And when someone hears vending, most often the thought is a vending machine, right? So vending machines and snack machines are still very prevalent in this day and age. There's over 250,000 active snack machines in the United States. Uh-huh. And a lot of them have been scooped up by very large companies. Mm-hmm. It happens that one of our largest customers has a very strong place in the vending segment, and we have a right to succeed within it. Our product has done really well in snack machines, and we're really amplifying our presence okay. in that area because they're most often found on colleges and universities, office buildings, sure. hospitals. The exact area that we're going after, that business plays a very big role. The other one that is also considered part of vending, which would probably be a fact that most people aren't very aware of, is this concept of micro markets. So micro markets are basically self-serve kiosks that are shelves and refrigerator vaults in office buildings and in hospitals mm-hmm. where employees work that are under lock and key that is camera operated, where the employee, it's on the honor system, where the employee goes, scans their item, and then takes whatever they've purchased, right? And it either gets deducted from their payroll or they pay by credit card. Mm-hmm. There's no one manning it. It's sort of an auto replenishment. There's over 40,000 of those in the United States now. And Awake is among the top performing items within those stores with many of the players that we play with. So we have found a really strong home there and hired an individual that I'd call the LeBron James of this area that has really helped spread the success that Awake has had with a lot of these influential players that can help bring our business to life in a meaningful way. And that's paying out in spades for us right now. So a lot of our focus is there. And all while that's happening, we're cultivating our retail business. So we've got sales folks really helping with our business at Costco, which is now expanding from Eastern Canada to Western Canada into the Southeast United States. And then our retail presence with major retailers, we're really starting to spend some time on through our sales director in the U.S.
So how many different, so right now you have, you said you have, how many products do you have total now?
We have about 45 active items. And now, so we have that span
that's,
across.
That's putting flavors and everything together.
Right. Eight different flavors.
Yeah, but forget about the flavors. Like right. as far as like the actual different types of items. So for example, you know, you have chocolate bars. You have the individual wrapped. Like
yeah. It all falls within two different areas, mm-hmm. bars and bites.
Yeah, that's the easiest way to say it. That's what I was getting at, yeah.
And within the bars, we have three different flavors, and within the bites, I think there's eight that we have all together. Yes. And the bites come, they're all individually wrapped across all aspects of our portfolio, sure. and some are in a 50-count pouch. At Costco, we sell a 32-count pouch.
I love those.
in Shoppers and in other traditional retailers, we sell an 8-count pouch. Mm-hmm. We have individual... our bites for individual purchase and what we call a gravity fed change maker that's perfect for the counter. So in Canada, you'd find them at your local Circle K's as an example. Mm-hmm. And then we have our bars that are available in a 12 pack that we often sell at the point of impulse as well. So
I find the bites are the most popular. I don't know if that's what you guys sell
that's
the most
exactly
of,
what it is.
It's everywhere. Like that's what
our caramel bite is outpaces other flavors by two times.
Really?
All of our other flavors. Yeah.
Even more than the peanut butter?
Peanut butter is not, so I you're right. Yes, peanut butter is a popular flavor, but
allergies.
Yes. So caramel tends to pull on the heartstrings of our consumers more. And that product has really taken off. Sure. It's also delicious. Happens to still be my favorite. So
100%. And as an Orthodox Christian, I'm biased because the one that you sell, you have one, the sea salt one, the dark chocolate one,
yeah,
at Costco.
Yeah.
Is fasting friendly.
It
it's
is
fully vegan. Yeah. There's no milk. There's no nothing. And I'm like, so for those of you who are listening, you don't know, for Orthodox Christians, when we fast, we're during our fasting periods, which are many during the year, we go vegan. So we're not, no milk, no dairy, nothing, no meat. And so those are like completely, like,
yeah, not other products. We don't certify it vegan because it could be around, yeah, yeah, it, but there is no active.
Correct.
For those items that we have. So we have a dark chocolate portfolio. Those tend to have either zero to little milk to no milk kind of thing. So, yeah, and there's elements within our portfolio that have it. And it is the one funny part about chocolate is that milk chocolate really is, and dark chocolate, the difference is the absence or presence of, and the quantity of milk powder that's in it.
Yeah.
So in our case, we have some items that don't have it, which is perfect for that individual that's looking,
Lent quite
that's
often
looking to fast from dairy. Yeah.
100%. Yeah. So it's diverse, and it helps like lots of different people, different dietary restrictions, things like that. Yeah. There's something for everybody, which is really great. So where are you guys? So now you're 2025, like, what are you guys looking for as far as, maybe like some of your vision for the future, like anything special you're working on or any kind of new products that you guys are thinking about?
Yeah, so
without giving anything away that you can't.
No, honestly. So part of what we see our product in is I mentioned sort of functional products as a catalyst for growth. Well, there's more functions than just keeping people awake through caffeine.
Sure.
So we actually have working formulas in a number of growing areas, mm-hmm, of function. When you think of function, you think of gut health, you think of sleep and restfulness,
probiotic.
Think about mood,
yeah,
mood. You think about all of those different elements that that our brand can play in. We've actually been working with a local college to help develop formulas within those space where we can render those functional ingredients as tasteless as we have the caffeine, mm-hmm, and bring to and life expand a meaningful portfolio of products so that we become the best tasting and fastest growing functional chocolate company in the world.
Wait. I just had a thought now. Okay. So let's say you come up with a melatonin sleep aid chocolate. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't call it awake. You'd have to call it asleep.
You're right. So it's funny that we have
you need, yeah, a new logo.
So awake, when you think about it, right? Most of the way people have known us has been the awake bars. Right,
yeah,
they've
of course,
known
yeah
us for the Wake Bites, Awake Bars. We would figure out that there's an umbrella branding strategy that then becomes a part of the conversation.
Yes,
right,
yes.
There is trademarking and everything else that's involved in getting our product. So we do have assigned names. So the umbrellas you think of is the Happy Owl Chocolate Company, and
I
you
see
have all of these different portfolio,
sure,
products that come with it. Right, so that's one area that we're going on without giving too much away. That's an area of function that we're that where our vision
this
involves.
Is what Facebook did.
I know.
With Meta.
That's it. Right? So you think
they
about
too many,
yeah,
acquisitions, right?
They created, you know,
WhatsApp,
the umbrella.
This, that. It's not all Facebook.
Right.
So, yeah.
So Meta is now the umbrella that, yeah, that spans into a number of different realms.
Sure.
So that would be one area. The other one that we're looking at is Awake as an ingredient. So not just the brand itself, but to get the product known. So we have developed a working chocolate chip formula,
oh,
that
wow,
we will be launching in the United States in the very near future, and working with chefs across the country to...
So caffeinated chocolate chips.
Caffeinated chocolate chips to add to...
Bakers will love that.
And that's been part of the realm. So because we work with one of the largest vending companies in the world,
sure,
Compass Group, they have a food service realm that they've partnered with us in a very meaningful way. They've been a wonderful partner to work with.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, we've really angled. We've worked with their chefs in the business dining realm and in healthcare and in colleges and universities to help to help bring this product to life as an ingredient to other, mm-hmm, products. So
no chance of getting to the chocolate milk realm.
Not yet. No, you know what we've been asked.
I love
it.
Chocolate milk.
Protein shakes.
You know, you have muscle
shakes,
milk. You have all this stuff.
Yeah, it's a whole other world of,
yes,
of manufacturing. So
of
it's,
course, yeah,
a completely different a capability set. We've looked at it, but it isn't something that we have in our immediate plans. So.
Sure, sure. Nice. Okay, so that's exciting. That's a lot of,
yeah,
different things coming out.
Very I'm nice. Pumped up.
Well,
not just because I ate three before this.
You not having become desensitized to it at all?
No.
Man? Okay, that's good.
Still works just as well as it did from day one. So
yeah, I can attest to that. Like I don't eat a ton of it, but you know, like it does help. And my routine is like for me, like I take them with me to competitions.
So
that's a big one for me because competitions, like for our jiu-jitsu friends who are listening, it's like jiu-jitsu competitions are long days. You know, you're gonna go. You know the day, the time you're fighting. You go early. You gotta warm up. You gotta do this. You gotta do that. And then usually you have your division. Let's say it doesn't matter what time it is in the day because usually you're gonna show up like maybe 2 hours before mm-hmm. you're gonna warm up. The problem with jiu-jitsu competitions is, and this is where like I really appreciate like Awake as a product is that you kind of you have two things in a jiu-jitsu competition. You have the regular division. So let's say you go and you compete. And let's say you do well and you medal in your division, bronze, gold, or silver, right? If you do that, you qualify for what is called the open class category or what is called absolute. And that is later in the day. That is basically like after all the regular divisions, weight division, whatever, are done and the age group divisions, whoever qualified in that. So within the age group and the belt, the open class is all the different weights together. So basically, you could be like a featherweight, like a little tiny guy. You could be an ultra heavy like me, over 300 pounds. And you could sign up for this, what is called the absolute within your belt and within your age, right? Where anybody can fight anybody within that category, any weight.
Wow.
And it's like that because it's kind of like the David versus Goliath kind of thing where like the little guys want to test their jiu-jitsu against the really big guys and see if sure. they can win. Because if they can beat against a big guy, there's even more accolades, right? Yeah. So this is called the absolute division or the open class, right? And the thing with that is, and the problem that it poses, at least I find, that's why a lot of times I don't do the absolute, and a lot of my friends don't either, is that it's a long day mm-hmm. from an energy point of view. Because you go there, you compete, you're tired after you compete, right? And then you might have 3-4 hours mm-hmm. that you have to kill now until the absolutes happen.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're exhausted.
Yep.
And it's just you've already had your adrenaline dump. Even if you eat, even if you rest, it's a long day to kind of keep going. And then now you got to compete again and you got to be on again. Mm-hmm. Right. And I find like for a week, that's what I do. It's like, you know, I can stagger those and eat them as we go and then also have some type of energy at the end. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a big one. It helps out a lot along with other things as well. But giving you that little boost
keeps you going.
It keeps you going, right? And so I think that's really, really helpful.
Yeah, we endeavor to offer consumers a product that didn't send them to the moon, but just gave them enough to help get through their hectic and often tiring days, right?
Well, I find your product is not it doesn't have the same high. For example, like pure sugar, like a regular sugar chocolate bar, right? Where you eat it and then you feel high and then you have a crash right after, literally half an hour later.
Correct.
And you don't feel good, right? I find with yours, and again, I'm not just trying to promote your product because I like you and all this kind of stuff and you're on my podcast.
Thank you.
But like, no, I'm just telling the truth. Like, I find because having used it for quite some time now, for the last minimum 2 years, it's not the same. It's like, it's more of like you have an alertness. Okay, if you eat too much, obviously, okay, you know, if you sit there and you eat like a whole pack.
Yeah.
Like a whole pouch of it. Like, okay, obviously it's going to affect you, right? But if you have like two, it's more of like a steady, sustained
a
clarity.
Slow release.
It's not this massive like mm-hmm. punch in the face, right?
Yeah.
Which is better, in my opinion. Like it's not as drastic, mm-hmm. right? Have you had anybody else, like I just kind of wind it down, but have you had any, been approached over the years by other, like by like sports or by any kind of active lifestyle groups?
We're starting to work our way into that now.
Okay.
So I, you know, you don't realize, but just in sort of everyday usage, I have one every day before I go to the gym, 15 sure. minutes before it sort of gives you that boost. But we're now looking at, as our brand evolves and we convert from being more of a sales company to a marketing company, that's really trying to get the word of the brand out there now. The one area where we know you'd mentioned before is those grassroots events, local sports sponsorships. We've really started to. So organizations have started to come to us on, I'd call it on a more limited basis, but we're starting to really roll out our strategy of roll out the potential for partnering with sports teams,
mm-hmm.
using athlete influencers who could find everyday usage in our product.
Sports.
It's a lifestyle product that can 100%. Help people, even if it's that moment of indulgence that adds some further purpose and permissibility into a category that's empty calories.
Hockey.
Now, exactly.
Baseball, soccer,
that's it.
Like all these huge.
All of these different sports that can use that our product can play a role in. It is becoming much more important, and we're actually starting to invest behind it now. So.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Good. Great. So that's good. Well, I don't know if I have any other questions for you. It's like I'm trying to think in my mind. You kind of gave us the whole story, and you know, I hope that it goes better and it keeps growing and growing and growing.
Thank you.
I will always support, and I appreciate your support.
Thank you,
Dan. And it would be nice, like down the road. I don't know. I think as the tournaments, like the Bunker Tournament, is going to stay here, hosted at our church here. Mm-hmm. It's getting bigger every year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like year over year, we're like the competitors are staying the same, but we're trying to get more. Spectators. We're trying to get more spectators to come in because, you know, as you know, it's a charity event as well, right? So it's not really making any money. We're raising food for Hope, helping others prosper. Elias. We're raising, you know, training gear for Project X Guard, which is another project based out of Toronto that teaches jiu-jitsu to underprivileged youth. And so we're not looking to make any money. But as far as I am looking to bring in more spectators. Why? Because the more spectators, of course, the more we raise for local food kitchens and shelters and things like that. But also, I think as it evolves and it gets bigger as an event, like my vision for it is that it becomes more refined every year, right? So we're running in a banquet hall, right? So something that they have in the States that we don't have here is they have these kind of jiu-jitsu. They're kind of tournaments, but they're not tournaments like in the classic sense. It's more like almost like a show. They have a thing called, like, for example, Who's Number One in the States, where it's like it's no-gi jiu-jitsu, which is, you know, it's you know, not no-gi, like not the uniform. It's like it's in like spats and like, you know, shorts, whatever, right?
Yeah.
It's like it looks like wrestling a lot more.
Okay.
It's jiu-jitsu, but without the gi, without the uniform. And that's really big now, right? And that's what really makes a lot more money for competitors. And they'll have like these nights where you'll have like a fight card, kind of like UFC.
Oh, wow.
And you'll have like the top jiu-jitsu fighters. But it's in a location where you have a stage, you have the mats in the middle, but then you have dinner. Like you have drinks, you have tables, and people will go, they'll buy a ticket, they can have a meal, they can have drinks, and they can watch the fights, right? So it's more laid back.
Wow.
But it's an event. And they have these all over the States, and they, you know, they show it on different subscription apps like Flow Grappling, what it's called, which I have. But in Canada, we don't have any of that, right? And so this is kind of like not the model because we're not looking to make money, but this is kind of like the style that I'm looking for. That's why I like the fact that we have the banquet hall here, right? That we have it, like, you know, we have it on the dance floor. We have these nice professional mats now. We have music going. We have a little bit of lighting. I'm trying to organize everything else so like the ambiance is nice.
It's perfect. Like it actually works out perfect. If that's the goal of the end state, that
100%.
It can work within the confines of the building that you're already in.
100%. So. Yeah. And you know, like our banquet hall holds about 200 people, let's say more or less, maybe a little less if we don't have the banquet hall. I mean, the dance floor. Mm-hmm. We had about 100 people show up last time.
Wow.
That's including competitors too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have 16 competitors in the blue belt, like in the male division, we had another 4 females. So it's not a lot. So you're still looking at 80 people who came to kind of participate, right?
Wow.
So I hope that's going to get even bigger this December because we're always doing in December. But I want to do it a little bit more organized where, yes, we could somehow find a way to bring in food, right? Like maybe a food truck. Maybe it is in December. It's a little hard because food trucks don't usually go out in the winter. At least we're having difficulty getting them. But something like that. And also I want to have a greater presence of Awake.
Yeah.
Of like, you know, Michael Bauer also like Skinusa Sea Vegetables, which they have like they have a massive, they've been growing their business quite a bit, as far as like you know green drink and protein and things like that, like the different health kind of products, right? But I want to have like more of a presence at this thing, so people not only were kind of giving them samples and say here, you know, try this, but like maybe have a little kiosk, not to sell per se, but you can do that too, but more. So that people can ask questions.
Well, it's exciting. It's you're creating an entertainment venue with things that are around. Yeah,
that's right. So people can come in and say, oh, you know, like you go over to the Awake kiosk and say, like, I want to ask questions about this product. You know what I mean? I want to know more about this, right? How can this help me? Whatever. Same thing with some of the other vendors. So this is where I would like to see it going in the future.
Cool.
Because I think it's important to kind of get the word out there and to kind of let it permeate in the community. right?
Let us know how we can help. We'd love to be a part of it. So
wonderful. Well, you've been a part of it since day one, and I really appreciate it. Well, since actually the second year, first year I didn't know you yet.
Right.
I was in the other location, but ever since we grew it to make it a charity event, which has been 2 years now, you've been helping us from day one, so I really appreciate it.
And we will continue to.
Yeah, and thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
For your time. And
this
look
was
forward,
fun.
Yeah, and I look forward to having you on again maybe in the future, and also having you at the event in December.
Awesome. Thanks.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
See ya.
Thanks for listening to the Bunker Jiu-Jitsu podcast. Feel free to follow us on Instagram and YouTube. And if you want to reach out with any questions or if you're interested in being on the show, feel free to email us at bunkerjiu-jitsu@gmail.com. Thanks and take care.